Greetings to the crew of the Gaia Navigation Experiment, friends and allies scattered across the planet, and anyone else who cares to listen. This is your nav again, John Lash, speaking on Saturday, August 18th, in the merry year of 2012. And I'm speaking this morning from the lounge of the navigator's quarters. That's downstairs where the big glass doors open onto the outer terrace at ground level. It's dawn, actually, close to dawn on this Saturday morning in August. And Jupiter and Venus are visible high over the hills above the eastern horizon. Title of this briefing, number 21, is Defiance and Deterrence. A little bit of a cumbersome title, but I'll let it go at that. It's unusual for me to be talking to you here from this room in the Turton's humble palace. I just want to sit here with the doors open and feel the cool air of the morning and watch the dawn come over the land. This is the first day of the new Dakini shift, which would be easy to pick, easy to call this time. It would be the shift of one of the Mahavidyas known as Shodashi, whose name, interestingly, means 16. Sweet 16. And this is the first day of that shift. And I would say that in terms of the local omens and the local spirits of the land and weather, there was a real feeling of moving into the shift. A palpable feeling, I should say, of moving into this shift over the last couple of evenings. It got cooler, something like the cool of autumn, creeping into the summer evenings. And also last night, strangely, it was moist. There was a moisture in the air, even though there wasn't a speck of rain and hasn't been one for months. But the air was moist, the night was moist, and you could feel it on your skin. And the dawn this morning in Andalusia, in the Reed Valley looking out to Africa, is cool and moist. And this is the opening mood of the Shodashi shift. What I'd like to do in this NAB briefing, number 21, is pick up on some points and themes from the last briefing entitled Sophia Uploading and relate them to the prominent themes of the current briefing. I would point out that on this one occasion, speaking to you on the 18th of August, I am a little bit ahead of the game here. One of these days, I'll be completely ahead of the game, perhaps. Who knows? But I'm a little ahead of the game right now in speaking to you of an upcoming event, and that will be the appearance of the sunset crescent that signals the new shift. When you observe the sunset crescent in a couple of days, on the 20th or 21st of August, you will note that it appears in the constellation of the Virgin. Of course, that is the constellation correlated to Shodashi. But you'll also note that the sunset crescent makes a passage at its first appearance through the part of the Virgin where the conjunction of Saturn and Mars is now unfolding. Now, this conjunction was actually exact, I think, perhaps 3 or 4 days ago. And the exact alignment was a visual phenomenon that you could have seen in the evening sky for about 40 minutes before sunset, 40 minutes after sunset, excuse me. You would have seen Saturn on the top, Mars below it, and then below Mars, the bright star Spica, which is in the left hand of the Virgin. So it so happens that the longitudinal conjunction of Mars and Saturn coincided with the position of Spica, and they were in a vertical, more or less vertical line, Saturn on top, Mars in the middle, Spica on the bottom, and pretty much equally placed. What you see now, as you observe how the sunset crescent moves past this grouping, is that Mars has moved ahead. The middle light, the middle celestial body, has moved ahead, that is to say, along the natural order of the zodiac from right to left as viewed in the northern hemisphere. And so at some point the moon will pass through or close to that configuration. If you want to go cheat, go look it up on Stellarium. But you don't really have to do that, given that you have good observational conditions. You can see it with your own eyes around the 20th and 21st of August. That conjunction and its significance is the main subject of this briefing. And to whet your appetite for it, I'd like to have you recall my commentary on the Venus-Jupiter conjunction that occurred at sunset in the springtime in the month of April. You remember that the Venus-Jupiter conjunctions fell into two types. The sunset conjunction, which was the omen of remembering, and the sunrise conjunction, which happened recently when they met again, but this time in the bull, and that was the omen of deliverance. Looking back to April, you might recall that I spoke of viewing the Venus-Jupiter conjunction here on the terrace. And at that time, I was jolted by the syntax that came to me, jolted by the language that came as an expression of this conjunction, simply by the act of observing it and bringing certain factors of imagination to the observation. The language was triggered. The configuration itself, you could say, triggered the language by which I could describe it. And so I talked about the metaphor of conversation, and I asked the question, what are Venus and Jupiter talking about? What is the subject of their conversation? You may recall that the subject of that conversation consisted of two themes, the guidance of pleasure and the pleasure of guidance. So I might turn now to the Mars-Saturn conjunction in the evening sky after sunset. I might ask the same question. Well, what are Mars and Saturn conversing about? How can we pick up on that conversation? And how can we relate that conversation to the ongoing process of correction? And even more critically, even more pertinently, how can we relate that conversation to our participation in correction and make it actionable? So I'll whet your appetite with that question, and later on in the course of this briefing, I'll give you my proposal for the inceptive syntax of the Mars-Saturn conjunction. Right now, though, to kick off this briefing, I'd like to just loop back for a moment to the previous one on Sophia uploading. I'd also like to correct something, a small but critical error that I made in a previous briefing when I said that the barycenter of the Earth-Moon system is the common center of gravity between the Earth and the Moon. That is not so. It is the common center of mass, okay? The common center of mass. And mass is an extremely mysterious factor in the physics of the universe. I've often said, and this is a fact of Gaian physics, that the organic light has infinite density and zero mass. This is a remarkable fact, which you know by direct contact with the organic light. So mass is a mysterious factor, and in some respect, or certainly would be one of those factors, one of those defining elements of physics, cosmic physics, that would need to be redefined during this period of correction. And perhaps the electric universe, plasma cosmology people could be genial and generous in coming up with a new definition of mass. So point out that little glitch. And now just want to repeat a little bit about what I said about the upload process that has been underway as part of Pleromic Relay. I covered it pretty quickly at the end of the last briefing. So let me just expand on it a little bit more and take a slow and comfortable pace to do so. You know, I was thinking the other day, and I was talking to crew member who's visiting me right now about this today. We were sitting on the terrace, Stephanie and I, chatting in the twilight, and I said, you know, if I had 10 minutes to live, and somebody handed me a microphone and put the camera on me and asked me what the main Turton would like to say in the last 10 minutes of his life, I know exactly what I would say. I would say that I would tell the world what I would like to be remembered for. And what I would like to be remembered for are two announcements that I made between 2011 and 2014. The first announcement that I made is that the planet Earth is breaking away from the capture of the solar system and becoming a free roaming body capable of self-navigation and self-propulsion. I made that announcement, and I'm the only person in the world who has made that announcement. Isn't that true? So I'm really proud of that. And I have a second announcement that I would add of equal significance. I've also said that through the story of Carl Jung and Sabina Spielrein, which I've recorded in a screenplay, we have a record of an immense discovery, an immense discovery. Jung himself said in a letter that he wrote to Sabina that this was the greatest discovery of his career and that she led him to it. He admitted that. And I have announced this discovery in my own way. I've taken it from Jung and given it another dimension by putting it into the framework of a Gnostic and Sophianic syntax. What was the discovery that Jung made? Well, he discovered that in the symbolic language of imagination, the psyche of the human species speaks to us. And what he and Sabina were in the process of discovering was how it speaks to us, how to read the code of the symbolic and archetypal language of the psyche. And as you know from the small excerpt I read of their story, they were deeply intrigued by the question of the psyche actually speaking for itself. So the second announcement that I've made to the world in this period when the initial conditions of correction are being established by the planetary animal mother herself is this. We on Earth are now living in the moment of discovering how the human psyche speaks for itself as the Anthropos, and how the divine Sophia, who is the originator of the Anthropos, speaks to it in turn. That is my second announcement. Now, if you hold these two announcements in your mind, if you contemplate them and reflect on them, you might find that there is something about these announcements that doesn't go away. You might find that no matter how many times you recall these two announcements, they grow fresher and more powerful, more vivid, more palpable in your mind. You know, the human animal is a creature of habit, and we have a tendency to repeat things. And in the natural order of human psychology, when something is repeated, its effect wears off. The Archons don't know this, of course, and neither do the interspecies predators who are more or less soulless instruments of the archontic powers known as rulers or authorities. They don't know that by mindlessly and brutally repeating stupid lies to the human race, that eventually the effect of those lies is going to wear off. True, they will bring down and destroy the minds of a certain portion of the human race by that insane repetition. The Archons, in fact, are trying to do what Erwin Cameron did in Canada in the 1950s. Erwin, E-W-A-N, Cameron, was a psychologist who used electroshock therapy and other methods to achieve what he called a complete reprogramming of a human subject. He would use first electroshock therapy, and he used this on a number of cases, to completely wipe out a person's memory of who they were and where they came from. And then he would play them, not just for hours or days or for weeks at a time, but for weeks at a time, he would play them tape loops while they were sleeping and while they were in a drug condition, of endlessly repeating behavioral clues and statements, which would then program the behavior of this unfortunate subject. And this technique of Edwin Cameron, which you can easily research on the internet by putting his name into a search engine, is actually pretty much the crude technique of the archontic powers and the people who serve them, for instance, people in the media, people who repeat media lies, government lies, educational lies, financial lies, and so forth. They think that by endlessly repeating them to us, they can get us to behave zombie-like in the fashion to which we are programmed. And to some extent, they have a success with that. But to others of us, the repetition of a lie wears off the effect of the lie. So we don't fall, some human animals don't fall under the archontic spell. And one of the tests that you can apply to yourself to know how far you are under that spell is to consider these two propositions I just stated about the Earth breaking free of the capture of the solar system and about the psyche of the human species speaking for itself as the Anthropos and Sophia conversing with it. And if you find that those propositions, the more you contemplate them, the more vivid they become in your mind, the more alive, exciting, palpable they become, that is the measure and proof of how far out of reach you are of the archontic spell of zombification through the repetition of lies. Because these two announcements, for which I would love to be remembered, are the most profound truths that I have ever discovered in my entire life. And they are both actionable. I bring up this topic not only because it's floating around in my house and in the ambience of my life right now on this cool summer morning in Spain, but also because it relates to what is happening with Sophia herself. I pointed out that the second little 2 or 3 day blip on the induction magnetometer indicated a log-on action. First, there was a 24 or 30 day log-on action. That was the logging down of the pleromic aeons into the bima of the Earth through the Pleiades spindle. Once that part of the relay was established, incoming data, incoming attention, including specifically the attention of Thelete and Christos upon our little planetary experiment, next came the outgoing logon. And since the outgoing logon, which occurred in the first few days of August, I believe, there is a massive uploading from the planetary animal mother, from the divine Sophia to the pleromic eons, also passing through the Pleiades spindle. And this is like, what is this like for Sophia? What is this like for the life and intelligence of the Earth? If you live in her story, if you have a passion for her life that is as great as you have for your own, then you would feel what it is she's doing right now. And your empathy would show you and tell you that she's in a massive debriefing process before the consciousness of the pleromic aeons. Now get one thing straight. The Pleuromic aeons are not at all ignorant of what has been going on in these kalpas of earth, of the earthly experiment since the divine Sophia morphed into this planet. Now, since the divine Sophia morphed into this planet, there have been an incalculable number of kalpas of 26,000 years each. This is just a figure that we're using provisionally to put our minds into an aeonic framework. It's only relative and provisional. Each one of these kalpas is a day of the experiment for the divine Sophia. Now, Pleuromic aeons are not ignorant of what has transpired in these kalpas and what has been happening for good and for the good of the experiment or against the experiment or against the divine Sophia herself in the course of the life cycles of Anthropos 10. They are observing all this from the Pleuromic core with their massive powers of observation, and they have been watching it closely. So they're not ignorant of what's been going on in this experiment in the terrestrial laboratory. And also they have attached to the planetary system three probes for registering the data that allows them to observe and record the events that have been happening in this experience. So what's different now that Sophia is uploading? Well, obviously, I mean, what do you think? They have not ever had, until the moment of her upload, her own subjective report on the experiment from inside it. It's as if they've been looking from the observation booth at things unfolding. And no matter how immense their powers of observation, what they could not know is her subjective observations. And now they are receiving those in a massive data stream uploaded from the Earth to the galactic center. Stop and picture that for a moment. She's debriefing. She's telling them what has been going on from inside the experiment and from her unique perspective, which, as you know, is relatively anomalous as pleuromic experiments go, because in the ordinary run of things, the divine aeons do not immerse themselves in an experiment, but they leave it alone so it can develop on its own terms. So there you go. So the divine Sophia is actually speaking for herself to the pleuromic aeons, just in the way that the anima mundi, the psyche of the planet, wants to speak to humanity. You see? And her process of telling her story to the pleuromic aeons is also our process, those of us who are selected into her correction, it's also our process of advancing in the story. What a tremendous picture this is. What a tremendous moment this is. And even though we are in relative radio silence during the upload, the impact of this debriefing process is bound to be inconceivably immense for the future of this planet. And also, it is bound to be deeply intimate and to reveal itself in the ever-deepening intimacy that each and every one of you in this experiment has with the wisdom goddess. So even in ways that we don't know how, our intimacy with her and our complicity with her right now is deepening in a way it has never done before. All you can do is feel it. There is no human being or any shaman or rishi or realized person of any degree of consciousness who could possibly grasp what is in her upload. There is a way to roughly sketch out and frame out the content, and certainly to talk about the topics that she is highlighting in her debriefing to the aeons. There's a way to do that. I'm going to take a pass at that very soon. But essentially, no way. This is a conversation. This upload is an intense conversation between aeonic divinities, and there is no possible way that any of us can comprehend the enormous and vast data that is flowing in this upload. So that's my segue, as you could say, my link back to the previous NAB briefing. Now we'll move ahead in the remaining half hour of this briefing to the topics that are specific to the Mars-Saturn conjunction. I'm excited and delighted to be able to move into this new thematic area and to introduce now another facet of correction, because this is the facet, this is the aspect signaled by Mars and Saturn aligned to Spica or Mina, as the Egyptians called that star, M-E-N-A. It's one of the very few star names. It's the only star name that survives from Egyptian stellar cosmology. Happy to focus on the significance of that conjunction, because it brings our experiment to the very verge of solution now. We're talking about solution. Well, solution to what? Well, this particular conjunction signals the moment just before the fulcrum hit, the perigee fulcrum hit, when the systemic collapse of the entire archontic matrix is screamingly obvious. And it signifies the moment of a transition, a really important transition. You know, in any, we are problem-solving animals. And in any human situation where there's a problem to be faced, there are essentially two phases to problem solving. First thing is to figure out what the problem is. If we're traveling along in our little traveler van, our little bus, a group of us going together on a journey somewhere, and the van breaks down, we have to get out, we have to open the hood, and we have to figure out the problem. Once we figure out why the van is breaking down, and we know the problem, then we go to the solution. So a great deal of what has been happening since the 9/11 attacks, a great deal of involves the application of human ingenuity and investigation to this question: what the hell is wrong with this world that we're in? And where we have reached now is, it's a critical mass of investigation. Those who are involved in the investigation. This doesn't apply to the whole herd of human animals, because many of them don't care to investigate anything. They're just going to go into the marmite. Marmite is a kind of a sludge. They're just going to go into the sludge and into the debris So, as Kali says, you are either part and party to my supernatural magic, or you are rubble. There is no middle way in Kali Yuga. So, forget about the people who are rubble, who are the rubble and the bones and dust and smoke of the cremation ground. Forget about that. Focus your mind and your faith in humanity on that portion of humanity who have been making this investigation. And in the process of the investigating what's wrong with the system of the world, we now reach a critical mass. Not much more investigation of the problem is required. What happens now is, what is the solution? You know, it's remarkable that there's a complex series of perigee hits in the constellation of the scales during the 3 years when the initial conditions of correction are set, right? This is remarkable. I don't know about the rest of you, but I have never spent so much time in my life as I have over the last year and a half or so to investigate and understand economics and how the financial system of the world operates. And what I have come to understand is something that just about everyone else who's investigating it effectively and intelligently would agree on. And that is that the entire system of world finance and economy is fraudulent. It's a racket. We have not had a legitimate economy on this planet since 1913, when the Fed was introduced. And even before that, if you go and look at the long 3-hour documentary by Bill Still, The Money Masters, you can see how the banksters, even in the pre-Fed period, were struggling to take control of the finances of the world and rig the game to their favor. Well, they have absolutely and successfully done that. So, you know, another remarkable thing is that, what is it? It's now 17 months since the beginning of correction, and only about 10 months, we would say, since 10 or 12 months, since we're seeing these massive perigee hits in the scales. What has happened during that time is a massive exponential acceleration of the understanding of the fraudulence of the world economic system, which is represented by the constellation of the scales. Scales represents not only economy, which is just a system of agreements on how to manage commodities and services, right pan, against currencies, left pan. That's all economy is. We've seen that the economy is fraudulent, and we've also seen simultaneously that the justice system is completely fraudulent. The scales being also, obviously, an archetypal representation of the justice system. Why do you see, standing in front of almost all the courthouses of the world, a robed woman, blindfolded? That would be a version of the virgin archetype, holding the scales. Before the scales were introduced by the Telestai, around 400 BC, as an independent constellation placed between the Virgin and the Scorpion, the scales were pictured as being held by the Virgin. And humanity inherited that archetype in this image of the female figure of justice holding scales. So isn't it remarkable that the celestial archetype of the scales represents both the system of economy and the system of justice, and that in the time in which these perigee hits have been happening in the scales, there is a massive awakening among those who are searching for the truth to the complete fraudulence and the nature, the rigged and criminal nature of both those systems. I mean, don't you find that kind of remarkable? I mean, if you're looking, you know, for correspondences between the cosmos and the psyche, well, take that one on board, folks. It's not only a correspondence between the celestial archetype in the cosmos and the human psyche, but it's a threefold correspondence that extends to the realm of the entire realm of our social interactions with each other. It's a complete revelation of the problem and a revelation of the method of the perpetrators. What is the method of the perpetrators? Cheat and steal and murder. That's the method of the perpetrators. And use as much psi warfare and mind control, mind fuck, as you can in the process of doing so. Because the mind control and the mind fuck and the psychological warfare are necessary to stupefy and deceive people so that they are unable to defend themselves. Now, what's the turning point? The turning point comes right now, in August and September of 2012, when enough is known of the problem to act on a solution to the problem, to begin to act. And to begin to act is to demonstrate two key factors. How will we know, by observing the world around us, that some people are beginning to act on the revelation of the method, the revelation of the criminality, the revelation of the fraud and lies? By two actions that are exhibited by people: defiance and deterrence. Now, one act of defiance has already happened. As I pointed out, in the Julian Assange affair, the Ecuadorian government defied the United States and Canada. The United States and the UK. These big, big criminal power players in the global game. And the little country of Ecuador, which interestingly might be associated, if you want to apply some synchro mysticism, to use that hip term, little kingdom of Ecuador, what does it bring to mind? Equilibrium. What does equilibrium bring to mind? Oh, archetypal concept of the scales. When the scales are in equilibrium, we have a fair society. And what happened from Ecuador is that somebody in Ecuador demonstrated an act of defiance against the globalist predators and against the rigged system that is ruining this experiment, ruining the possibility for the human potential to be realized and cultivated. So there you go. Defiance is a quality of Mars. So that is what Mars is saying. That is what Mars is talking in this conversation between Mars and Saturn. Mars is talking about the role of defiance, the behavior of defiance. When you commit acts of defiance, and that is the proof that you are now in the solution. And I don't just mean the solution of the guaranteed part of the solution. We really start to think about this now. I said that there's a guaranteed part of the solution, and that is the part of the self-selected participation in Sophia's correction, in selecting yourself to be a prototype or precursor of Anthropos 11. She's already recalibrating the human species for the next kalpa. You want to be involved in that? You want to be part of that? That is the guaranteed solution. The solution that I've said is up, is still, the jury's still out, they say, to apply a Libran metaphor. That's the part of solution that would be evident in a complete re-rendering of the social order, in a massive correction of the fraud and corruption of the social order. Now, I'm not guaranteeing you that's going to happen, but what I can do in this briefing is give you the tool to observe if it is happening or not. And that's very simple. There are two tools can be drawn from the conversation of Mars and Saturn. The more that we see in little events, in little incidents, as well as in larger scale developments on this planet, acts of defiance, then we know that the second part of this of correction could also be realized. And very, very rapidly. I would say at the absolute minimum in 2.5 years, and the absolute maximum in 5. Now, considering how long this problem has been developing historically, that would be in the blink of an eye. And why could it happen so quickly? Why could the re-rendering of society return to humane and fair values and the elimination of the parasitical gangster banksters and the mind fuck agenda of the government? Why could all that happen? Why could all that be blown away so fast? It would perhaps be better to say how rather than why. How is it possible that all of that, which has accumulated over some centuries now, be blown away so fast? That's possible on two counts, my friends. The first count is the mundane aspect of the situation. And there I would cite Max Kaiser, who pointed out recently in talking on the Alex Jones show that systems theory tells us that as the complexity of any system increases, it increases exponentially, and that exponential increase in the complexity of a system puts the system massively at risk of collapse. And this is the stage we have reached today in regard to everything that is happening on this planet. Economy, mind control, the lies of the media, and in particular, the insane and Byzantine criminal activity of the interspecies predators. It has reached a point of such complexity that it is collapsing under its own experiential spiraling out of control. An example of that is something that happened recently with this Wall Street firm called Knight, K-N-I-G-H-T, when they lost $440 billion due to an algorithmic glitch in their high-frequency trading. You know, more than, Max Kaiser also informs us of this interesting point, more than 85% of the trading that is done in the artificial or archontic economy is done between computers using algorithms in what is called HFT, high-frequency trading. And that system, which is a system of fraud designed from the outset to be fraudulent and which works with fictional numbers and fictional entities, toxic financial instruments such as derivatives, in order to strip the economy, strip the real economy, that whole system has become so precarious that it's starting to fail due to its own complexity. And so this one company lost $440 million because of an algorithmic glitch. And that's just the beginning. So we're talking not only about the theft inside this archonic framework of economy, such as Corzine's theft of $1.4 billion from the commodities funds held by his clients, segregated funds, which he used in a blackmail situation. He had to pay off some London people at J.P. Morgan for his gambling debts. This is absolutely known. This is open knowledge, confirmed, proven today. So not only is the criminality becoming so Byzantine and so flagrant that it's starting to collapse on itself, but the archontic structures of the economy are collapsing. The mundane reason is, as Max Keiser stated, according to system theories, increasing complexity of the system makes it increasingly weak. The super mundane reason is because, as I said at the start of this experiment, the divine Sophia herself would bring down the archontic matrix. It's not our job to bring down the archonic matrix. She's bringing it down herself. But once she brings it down, especially in the second half of correction that we enter in September, that collapse puts the intimate participants of her correction on the front line of action. It's time for us to understand how solutions are to be enacted, how solutions are to be effectuated on this planet in every single aspect of life. And one of those ways is through using the power of defiance represented by Mars. You could say, in the analogy that I've been using of the nautical analogy for the solar system, remember Jupiter was the tug, and the Earth is the mothership, and Saturn is the lightship, and Mars is the warship. And so the warship has been sailing alongside the gunship, you could say, that's Mars, has been sailing alongside the lightship, which is Saturn. And those two vessels, have been having a conversation. So what is the other factor represented by Saturn? I would call this factor, on an exact same level of importance as defiance, which is the Mars factor, I would call this factor the factor of deterrence. And acts of defiance and acts of deterrence are what bring the solution to humanity and make it possible. Yes, indeed, it is within the range of possibility that this horrible world of corruption and lies could be turned around. It is actually possible if the force of deterrence is taken into the conscience of each individual person on this planet who wishes to turn around the system, who wishes to win back the social order for humanity, take it away from the criminals. The force of deterrence and the force of defiance as weapons, as warrior tools held in the conscience This is how it's done. Now, there's an enormous act, enormous drama of defiance and deterrence being enacted in the United States right now. You may have heard the news that to date, Homeland Security has ordered 1.4 billion rounds of hollow point ammunition and sniper ammunition. And that other government agencies, everything from the Weather Bureau to the IRS, are now ordering even more. 1.4 billion rounds. That's four rounds for every man, woman, and child in the United States of America has been ordered by Homeland Security, and more is being ordered. And people know this. You may not know the statistics, that exact statistic, but more and more people know that statistic every day. And people are reacting by acts of defiance and deterrence. That is to say, they're arming themselves. Because arms are a way to deter aggression. And one of the main reason why the right to bear arms is contained in the Second Amendment to the Constitution, in the Bill of Rights, is that people need to defend themselves when their government goes insane. So, while there are many people in the United States of America, my home country, which I do love, as well as the ideal of freedom represented by that country. But who knows? Maybe America never did realize its own true ideal of freedom. Maybe this is the moment when it can. You know, some people in the United States wouldn't be able to make sense of this briefing, are acting in defiance and in deterrence. And I can assure you that the timing of their action corresponds precisely to the timing of this conjunction. But now I want to add something else about this conjunction that would only be acceptable, let's say, to those of us in the experiment. The alignment of Mars and Saturn, which you're going to be observing in the night sky now for the remainder of this month, occurs, as I said, very close to the star Spica. Now, I happen to have been born with Jupiter conjunct the star Spica, Jupiter. And one thing that you can read in a fairly elementary way when you're doing Starbase is you can read what I call the message of a person. You see, every one of you as a human animal, by the very fact that you are a member of the human community of animals, has a message to deliver to your fellow animals. You all have a message, a social message. And that social message is indicated by the constellation in which Jupiter is placed at your birth. When I was born, Jupiter was about 3 degrees from Spica in the hand of the Virgin. How have I realized that? Well, I have delivered to society through my books, and particularly through Not in His Image and through the Metahistory website, the message that the entheogenic mysteries are an expression of divine wisdom imparted to humanity to correct its inevitable course into insanity. I pointed out, and I don't think anyone else who happens to write on this subject may have stated this in just this way. I pointed out that the Divine Sophia provided a small number of plants that have psychomimetic properties and cerebromimetic properties. Now, according to Schulze and Hoffman in Plants of the Gods, there is about 200 of these species have been recorded. We don't know how many there are. There could be 2,000 of them or 20,000. Probably is 20,000. But 200 species of plants with specific psychoactive properties that mimic the neurochemistry that is already present in the human brain and enhance and augment that chemistry have been chemically identified and tested and verified, and their effects are totally and completely benevolent and enlightening. And what I pointed out was, to me, a simple and obvious fact as someone who uses these plants in telestic practice, and that is that they were provided by her as a failsafe, you could say. A failsafe against the insanity of our species. So that by taking these plants, we restore ourselves to the sanity that we have when we are not sucked into the archonic madness of egotism, psychosis, narcissism, and psychopathic, self-destructive forms of behavior. So, let's take a step back now. Think about the significance of these entheogenic and psychoactive plants, the sacred medicines, the sacred teacher plants, known and used by all indigenous cultures around the world. Take a step back. Consider if the Saturn and Mars conjunction occurs at Spica, what does it tell you? What does it suggest to you? What happens if you take those two tools for our solution socially and collectively and combine them with a message of entheogenic illumination? What does it say? What does it suggest to you? I've been reflecting on this question a lot over the last few days. And to conclude this briefing, I just want to give you my best shot, which is to give you a suggestion or a guideline or share with you my particular reflections on this topic. People around the world may perform acts of defiance, as we saw Ecuador defying the United States and the UK, who want to get their hands on Julian Assange and torture him for being a messenger. Didn't even do anything. And as I said, WikiLeaks is it's a rigged show anyway. Are we going to see deterrence? I haven't seen deterrence yet. Deterrence is a subject we need to look at closely, but acts of deterrence, well, so far there are no acts of deterrence. For instance, the globalist bankster mafia is ripping off American society and reducing it to ruins. And someone like John Corzine, the big buzz on the internet today, is that there will be no charges against John Corzine, who committed clearly fraudulent and criminal activity of theft. Even the New York Times, as Gerald Salenti points out, says the disappearance of the funds from MF Global, this was back in November with a perigee hit in the right pan, The disappearance. They vaporized. They disappeared. $1.2, $1.4 billion. Oh, yeah. They don't say it was stolen, but it was. But there's no... So John Corzine, who's a close friend of the President of the United States, stole these funds. And will he go on and steal some more? Well, of course he will. Why? Because there's nothing to deter him. Because they're not going to do anything to him. So what we need to think about when we think solution is not only how we defy the predators and the insane system of mind control and money control and military control that they propagate, but how to deter them from advancing their system. And that's not obvious yet. But I would point out this one factor. It might take the wisdom and illumination that comes from a ritual use of sacred plants in order to know what the necessary strategies are to be. I have no doubt that many people who would never follow this briefing and never subscribe to this experiment are going to be putting their lives on the line, and they're going to be performing acts of defiance and acts of deterrence. But I'm not so certain that the mere performance of those acts could lead to a better social order. What I propose to you is that the direction of our solution depends on some kind of visionary perspective that must be perhaps not wholly developed, but certainly partially developed, and perhaps fundamentally developed through the guidance from a non-human source of intelligence on this planet. That being the intelligence of the species of psychoactive plants. So just consider that proposition as you're observing the night sky after sunset and you watch the crescent moon of Shordashi glide past Mars and Saturn. And also, think about how it might occur that some acts of defiance and acts of deterrence could find their way into your life. We'll all have a role if the correction of the divine Sophia is going to make a difference in the social and collective order of things. Then every single responsible member of human society must pitch in. So we can say that the side-by-side journey for a moment, because Mars is moving ahead now, but the side-by-side journey of the gunship and the lightship is a signal of this moment. It's a signal of engagement, a signal of commitment. And I'm thrilled, actually, because up until now, as you know, I've been very cautious in suggesting that there could be any social or guaranteed any positive social or collective outcome from correction. What I'm saying now will be maybe worth considering again in a few weeks when we're on the other side of the perigee hit in the fulcrum of the scales. So I'll leave it at that and wish you all safe passage. Thank you for your patience. It's fully morning now. I think I'll have a glass of milk.
get my daily dose of tryptophan, and cruise through the day with all of you in mind and happy and grateful and thrilled more and more to be seeing, to see this experiment unfold and to see how her dream is coming true. Her dream is coming true. Thank you.